What up, witches, and welcome to Witching and Bitching, a podcast. I'm your host, Darren.
And I'm Vicky. How are you all today? So I don't know why that became sing-songy.
Is it? Welcome to the musical version of Witching and Bitching, where everything will be sung today.
Singing away. Oh, gosh, that's not going to be good.
So, Vicky, what are we going to do today? Have you got some facts for me to learn?
Of course. Okay, no, I can't sing. It'll keep going all day and I won't be able to sing and it'll turn terrible.
Why are we so chirpy today?
I don't know. I don't know what that is.
Is there something in the air?
Maybe there is, because it's like, it's cold, and although the sun's out here, but it's really cold.
Oh, it's freezing.
So I'd kind of be like, you know how you get like the inside.
How's it go?
I'm not going to do it again. It's a one-time shot. One shot.
Oh, damn. So what are we going to talk about today?
So today we're talking about the hermetic principles. Or the
what? The hermetic principles.
The hermetic principles, or yep, laws of magic, or spiritual principles. There's lots of different names that they kind
mystical
of...
mystical hermeticism, or... Yep.
There's all sorts. Yeah. There's all sorts. But basically, it's often known as the hermetic principles.
And where has this come from? Why are we talking about this now? Why now?
Why? Why now? Why? Yeah. Why? Well, it's for a few reasons, actually. For one, I know it got kind of sparked by one of our VIPs a little bit as well, that she mentioned something in there. But it's also a question that seems to come up a lot in a lot of like the witchcraft groups and things like that, is where to start. Where do I start? You're starting the path. It's like, what do I do first? Where do I start?
Yeah.
That's where we thought that this.
So we thought we'd break it down. The first thing you need to do is go out and spend all your money on all the expensive shit.
That's
so
right.
You look like a witch. Yeah, I'm just joking. Joking.
Because no. These are basically, aren't they? They're really the underlying principles of.
Yep.
If you want to go right, because this is an amazing topic to keep going down the rabbit hole.
Oh, yeah.
You could just keep going and going and going and going.
And then you look at the clock and you're like, oh, my God, it's been 5 days.
Where did that week go? Yeah, so you can take it as deep as you want, but it's kind of those underlying universal laws of everything. And if you kind of understand them or have some kind of awareness, like with everything in life, we can then start to move with those flows and start to work with them rather than constantly hitting our head against a brick wall.
Yeah, and it's also the, when you understand the hermetic principles, then it means like you then realize that big that was going to be really bad English. Big things can happen from small magic is what I was like trying to say, something along those lines. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like you don't need to do these big elaborate spells if you have all of the things done correctly.
Yeah,
you can do the smallest little instant magic, and it can have massive like return on investment. Now I'm turning into a banker.
Now you're a banker as well. We've gone from musical to banker to science.
Now, obviously,
but it's that simplicity of things as well that we keep often saying, is that we often get too caught up in the big and not enough into the actual.
But before we get to the simple, we're going to need to like go to the complicated, the gibberish side of things. So we'll get to that in a second.
But yes, where
did the principles come from?
Well, I'm not going to say this word because you know that I'm not great at pronouncing things, which is why you've thrown it to me.
Because I'm a bitch. No, I'm just kidding.
So it comes from the Emerald Temple. Oh, my God. See, now I got too flustered because I was thinking I was going to have to say that word. The Emerald Tablet.
Yes.
So this is where all of these writings and things stem from. There's a lot of different to bring it into the modern day and how we got the teachings. A lot of it was by word of mouth and things, but it originally came from the Emerald Tablet. Now, who scribed the Emerald Tablet?
It is said that the person who scribed it was Hermes Trismegistus.
Yay! I didn't have to say it.
And in Egyptian mythology, we equate him to Thoth.
Yep.
Which is the, for those that are familiar with the pantheon in Egypt, he's like the tall ibis looking, like very long.
Yeah.
Is it ibis? Is he an ibis?
Yeah, the ibis with the really long really beak. Long and he's often sort of seen to be like scribing, literally scribing something, a book and all the rest of it.
Or the tablet. Something is holding onto his writing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Exactly. And obviously the Book of Thoth is then a derivative of that, which is then what led to the, is it the OTO? Is the Book of Thoth, yeah. the OTO, the Golden yep. Dawn, all of them drew from Hermeticism.
Yeah.
Which is why the basis of all modern day magic can trace its roots back to there, because we've yes. all taken something from something, from something, from something, from something.
Yeah.
Now, fun fact, the... it is said that it preserves the wisdom from ancient Egyptians, Greeks, and even the wise ones of Atlantis,
mm.
written upon the green stone, and it holds the key of alchemy, meaning spiritual transformation. Now, I'm not talking alchemy as in turning lead into gold. We're yeah. talking about turning your basal materialistic consciousness into golden enlightenment.
Now, that was awesome. Mm. I love that. That was very poetic.
It sounds cool, huh?
It does. But again, it comes into those different planes of existence that we do. We often see things very much on the physical, which is like turning lead to gold, but we're talking more in the mental, spiritual realms.
Well, exactly. Because it's essentially, it's like, it's the foundation of all things. Like, it holds the key to alchemy. It's got foundations for Western magical traditions, including alchemists, magicians, philosophers, and witches. And essentially everything that we know today, or that we talk about today in context of magic, is drawn from this philosophy,
yeah.
essentially. Yeah. So while the Emerald Tablet is attributed to Hermes Trismegistus, mm-hmm. the first historical record of it was actually in Arabic. And it was from the Book of Belanius, The Wise on the Causes, also known as the Book of the Secret of Creation and the Nature of Reality, believed to be written by an Islamic alchemist by the name of Jabir ibn Hayyan, which is where it's said that the word gibberish, because people couldn't understand it. So they're like, it's just all gibberish. It's
just gibberish. But it comes from his name.
Jabir ibn Hayyan. Yeah.
I love that. Little fun fact. I love all those things. I love fun facts.
Because I actually speak gibberish to my husband. Like, as a language. No, he can understand me. I can speak in gibberish.
And he
can understand it. He just can't speak it back.
Oh.
But he can understand gibberish.
But he can't say it.
Yeah,
he can't speak.
But it comes in handy when you want to have like a secret conversation.
I was going to say, I've always wanted to do that. Have like your own secret language that nobody else knows.
This is what happens when you grow up with brothers and sisters, because you do that so your parents can't understand you. So my sister and I,
gotcha.
Shout out to my sister for teaching me gibberish way back when. And then we used to talk like with my sister in front of people, like, you know, so you can have that little secret code language. But anyway,
love that.
It back to this.
Yeah, sorry. Another tangent.
From there, it was said that there. The tablet was, and its inscriptions was later translated into Latin by Hugo mm-hmm. of Santala, and was first translated into English, most famously by, who do you think?
Well, I actually know the answer. But it blew my mind when I found out who it was. Who is it? Go on, say.
Sir Isaac Newton.
See, that was not at all what I thought you were going to say when you first told me off air.
Who do you think I was going to say?
I don't know, but I didn't really think it would be him. Because it's very sciencey. Do you know what I mean? Like,
well, we equate Newton to, he's the law of relativity.
Relativity, isn't he? Yeah. Is he the one with the apple on the head?
Yeah. Wasn't he also the one with the kite and the key and the electric bolt?
Yeah.
Even though, technically, Newton, or was it Tesla?
I know. That's a whole other kettle of fish there.
That's a different controversy altogether.
Yeah, but you just, I more associate that with like the science side of things, whereas this, I don't.
It's philosophy.
Yeah.
This literally just shows you that modern science and ancient philosophy are actually like speaking about the same things. So when people try to come to me and saying that witchcraft is a whole bunch of bullshit, I'm like, it's not though, because it's based on science. They're like, what do you mean? I'm like, all of our principles are based on like the laws of like Hermeticism, which is
almost the universal copies. Laws.
Yeah, it's basically physics and quantum physics.
Yeah.
Said in a different way. So I'm like, physicists and philosophers are a lot more in common than you realize.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Oh, it's so funny how we always have everything so separate. Mm. Everything is so separated and one's without the other, but it's all the same.
So shall we start with the gibberish first before we break it down?
Yeah, let's do it.
In our muggle speak way. So This is actually a modernized version of the Emerald Tablet in English. I won't read it in Arabic because you'll be like, what?
Be like, what?
So it's a bit of a lengthy one. So buckle up, people.
Here we go.
In truth, without deceit, certain and most veritable, that which is below corresponds to that which is above, and that which is above corresponds to that which is below, to accomplish the miracles of the one thing. And as all things have come from this one thing, through the meditation of one mind, so do all created things originate from this one thing through transformation. Its father is the sun, its mother the moon. The wind carries it in its belly. Its nurse is the earth. It is the origin of all. The consecration of the universe, its inherent strength is perfected if it is turned into earth. Separate the earth from fire, the subtle from the gross, gently and with great ingenuity, it rises from earth to heaven and descends again to earth, thereby combining within itself the powers of both the above and the below. Thus will you obtain the glory of the whole universe. All obscurity will be clear to you. This is the greatest force of all powers, because it overcomes every subtle thing and penetrates every solid thing. In this way was the universe created. From this comes many wondrous applications, because this is the pattern. Therefore, am I called the thrice greatest Hermes, having all three parts of the wisdom of the whole universe. Herein have I completely explained the operation of the sun. And now, if anyone is listening to that and thinking, what fuck did he just say? It's okay. We're going to break it down for you all.
Yeah.
Principle by principle, or law by law,
whatever you want to call them, so that it kind of creates the whole. So you can understand where the whole comes from.
Exactly. So, and if anyone wants to, I mean, obviously we're going to be scratching the surface, but for those of you who know, I'm currently in month 6 of my studies with the Temple of Witchcraft. And thankfully he's published this. This is the new release. So you'll remember from when we had Christopher Penzack on our show, this is the new release of the Inner Temple of Witchcraft, where he actually has, well, this was already in the OG, which I have over here too. I'm such a nerd.
I know you are. I love it.
I had to have the new one because it has all the new stuff in it.
It's got the new stuff in it. That's right. Yeah, you need to make sure, just in case.
But obviously he goes into it in a much deeper level, both in this book as well as in The Mystic Foundation.
Yeah, so there's a lot that goes through it. And also through a lot of like the Golden Dawn books and things like that as well. That has a lot of it. And if you can actually download, there's also the Kabbalion, however you want to say it, which was one of the modern written translations in English, which was just penned by the three initiates. You can actually find that online as well to actually download it, where it all comes from.
Yeah.
That's got a lot of info in there.
But we're basically going to break it down for you guys here.
Yeah.
So hopefully, obviously, as you all know, we're not claiming to be Wikipedia.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Definitely. Not when dealing with this.
Oh, no.
This is like next level, like, depth with understanding magic. So like we're just going to be scratching the surface to an extent, but giving you kind of, I guess, our definitions or interpretations of the scripture, and then how you can, I guess, apply it or observe it in what you do and how you practice.
Yeah. And kind of bringing it into the modern a little bit, like even giving the examples of just everyday life and things like that as well, where you can see it, because these are universal principles. They're just constantly around us.
Yeah.
Everywhere we're at. So.
I have to honestly say, when I first read about this back in 2005, roughly. Oh God, I'm showing my age because that's considered a long time
ago. I'm not giving years.
So back when I first started reading about it, because like it's something that I'd scratched the surface at, but I never really understood it. 2005 is when I really started to delve deep into Hermeticism, being the basis of all magic. And when I first understood it, and I had that aha moment when I looked around, I'm like, holy shit balls. Like, it's literally, you could see it in practice everywhere you look.
Yeah.
It's everywhere you look.
Everything.
And it's even now, as like a modern practitioner, but also a life coach, the amount of hermeticism that I use in my coaching practice.
Yes.
It's like the basis of all forms of coaching.
Yeah, it really is. And it's probably most people are actively using these things. mm-hmm. without actually realizing that
they just don't know. So you're doing yeah. magic without even knowing.
You don't even know. That's it. Don't even know you're doing it. So
and when you know, you know.
When you're in the know, you know.
Yeah.
But it has been really good to go back, because I know for me, I looked at this way back when. I'm not giving years or dates at all.
That's okay.
And I thought I kind of got it then, but then now, and I really didn't pay, not that I didn't pay attention, I didn't actually really go back over it.
You skim over it and you just go, oh yeah, whatever.
Yeah, and you keep going. But then now coming back and sort of re-going over everything again, I've got a whole new kind of perspective on it, and a whole new understanding that I probably didn't get at the beginning.
Well, because I guess also back then the driver was, I need to read this in order to do the cool funky spells.
True.
Whereas now, yeah, I need to read this to understand these cool funky spells.
Yeah, that's right. I want to know the why now. The why is the question now.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the exactly. curiosity thing.
Yes. So basically why we're saying that is like, I mean, we've both been in this practice for a very long time. And if this is the first time you're ever hearing about this stuff, it's okay if it feels a little bit overwhelming, if you don't understand it the first time you hear it. I mean, worst case scenario, you can always listen to this episode again and again and again and again and again every week for the rest of the year until it sinks in. That's totally fine.
You could maybe listen to it while you're sleeping, like it goes in.
we should organize like a hypnosis.
Like a hypnosis.
Where we can hypnotically... like get them to
all like the information. Learn
all the stuff that we crap on about on this show. Would anyone hear? Okay, viewers, I want to hear. Do you want to hear
a hypnotic version? Sleep
the sound. Soothing sounds of my voice as you sleep.
Of course everybody does.
I mean, I told Madam that sometimes I fall asleep listening to his voice, and he was
just that's like, true. True. I'm still not quite sure about that one. I don't quite know how you do that because it's very fun.
I know it's because when you're just flicking through TikTok, anyway, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Okay, bring it back.
Let's go back to where we're at.
So, shall we start with the principle of mentalism?
Yes. So let's start at the start. The first one is the principle.
You don't want to start at the end and work out where
I think maybe the start might be better.
Okay.
Just this one time. So here's a little quote that goes with it as well. Excuse me. The all is mind. The universe is mental. Ooh, there you go. That's the quote.
That's it.
That's all you get. No, I'm joking. So the law of mentalism, or the principle of mentalism, is that everything is a mental creation.
Mm-hmm.
So the all, everything comes from a mental process of mm-hmm. some description. So in everyday terms, if you want to put it into sort of how we work in our modern life, it's that kind of principle of a thought always precedes an action or something that's becoming manifest in a physical.
Well, it should.
Starts. But the thing is, it might not be a well thought of thought or an idea, but it does come from somewhere.
Yeah.
And even like a spontaneous act, it still starts from a thought, a spark, something before it becomes an actual action or it becomes something. So then if you want to look at it onto the more grander scale, everything is energy and everything is various densities of energy, which we'll talk a little bit more about later on in some of the other principles.
Mm-hmm.
But it is that spark, that spirit, that everything has had some form of creation. There has been some thought or some mental process. We are, I guess, you can also kind of probably, I don't know if people are going to throw rocks at me for saying this, but like you can kind of look at it if you want a really easy example of it is kind of the principle in Christianity where God created everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of his thought and then he manifested the whole world in that creation kind of thing. So that's that kind of principle. It's that thought. It's that manifest that then becomes manifest. So the all is spirit or whatever we call universe, all of those kind of things. So have I just kind of confused everybody more?
I don't think so. And another way to put it is like the all is a non-gender, non-pantheistic way of referring to the divine, whether you call it God, goddess, the source, Tao, prime vibration, first cause, mother, father, God, or great spirit. So it's basically that divine mind concept. Yeah. So it's genderless, it's it's everything and beyond. Nothing. It's like om.
Yeah, it is. It's everything and nothing. It's like that unknowable, undefinable
thing
that creates everything. That is the all, where everything kind of comes from at the end.
And essentially it's saying that we are all thoughts of the divine mind, existing within the divine mind, but also outside of the divine mind. So it's that whole thing of, I mean, modern day people now, there might be some people that come for me saying you're oversimplifying it, but like, you know, where people often talk about the collective consciousness.
Yes.
That is all, that concept of the collective consciousness comes from the fact that we are all manifestations of the divine mind. Therefore we're all connected through the divine mind.
Yep.
Like that's why we can all tap into the same collective consciousness, because we're all small fragments of a bigger fragment.
That's it. We're not separate from it. We're actually a part of it. See what I mean? Where we can start to go down all these awesome rabbit holes.
Oh, absolutely. And this is like, this connects so closely to quantum physics.
Yes.
Like, and that whole thing of collective consciousness and like thoughts becoming things and like.
All of it. Yeah. All of it. And in like a more physical, because it, like I mentioned before, there, with throughout all of these laws, there is those three planes of existence, and that's where we kind of filter them all through. So you've got the physical, the mental, the spiritual. So we often think of things more in that physical manifestation. So in, I guess in our everyday and through our life and what have you, there is that the power of the mind, how important and how, I don't know, I've lost the word now, but anyway, but how the power of the mind is actually the most powerful thing in physical manifestation. Mm-hmm. It's not just a thought. It's not just a something. That's how it's created.
Well, as a coach, I always talk about this. And I say this in tarot. I say this everywhere, that thoughts become things.
Yeah.
Like the power of the mind, we literally, they say, I mean, I don't know if this fact is true or not, but they say that we only use 10% of our brain. Mm. So when you tap into, when you understand the brain and how it works and how, the brain is the most ego-driven thing in our body. It always wants to, like, the brain has to be right.
Yeah, it wants to be right all the time.
Based on the law of mentalism, like, as soon as you think something, the brain looks for confirmation bias to show that whatever you thought of is true.
Yeah.
But that's also leading onto one of the other principles, so I won't go into
that. I know, that's one. And that's the thing, though, that it's a good point to highlight, though, that they are all really interconnected.
You can't have one without the other.
No, even though they may be defined as separate laws, they actually all, when you start to look at them, they actually all are completely intertwined with all of them. Yep. Everything's so intertwined. So,
and so as a an example of this, I did an exercise. This was part of my studies where I had to actually go outside and do cloud busting.
Yeah.
And I remember because I called Vicky and I was on like video call with her. Yeah. I actually, no joke, this blew my motherfucking mind.
Yes.
It was the whole thing of, and obviously there's a lot more of a deeper practice. Like you could read this book, it has the exercise in there.
Yeah.
But essentially it's in the simplistic form, it was to get into a meditative state and then go outside, literally pick a cloud. And using your mind, burst the cloud apart until it dissolved completely into nothing.
Love it.
Instantly.
So cool.
My brain was like, oh, fuck off, you can do that. That's it.
It's like, no way.
And so, of course, you're filled with doubt. But the moment I went, hang on a second, thoughts become things. So based on the law of mentalism, if I can think it, therefore it can happen. And so I just kept focusing. Before I know it, it literally wasn't just the wind's blowing and it's slowly dissipating. No. It literally...
It was gone. And that then there was big clouds everywhere else.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like a wind had kind of come through. Yeah. It wasn't like the wind had just come through and they'd all sort of started to scatter a little bit or something because they were all still there.
Yeah. So I'm still kicking myself that even happened. I remember I was like on cloud nine. Oh, that's a weird analogy. Yeah, on cloud nine for like a good couple of hours. And like, did I just fucking do that? What?
I just busted clouds.
Sorry, clouds. I didn't mean it.
No, that's right. But then also I guess within our magical work and things like that, like even in our spell work and our ritual magic and things like that, it's where I guess the basis of our intent and things like that comes from as well. It's like even that spark to even think of doing a spell or to think of whatever the theme or whatever you're wanting to manifest or wanting to create, that's all a part of mentalism. As well.
And it's the whole concept of like when casting a spell, like after it first becomes a thought, then it becomes an action, then it becomes that spiritual. Like we talked about this actually depending on what order we release them.
Yeah, I was just thinking we can't actually talk about that.
Or yet. We're about to, one or the other, just look for the interview with Patty Negri. So if it hasn't come out yet, it means stay tuned. It'll be the next one or the next one after that.
Yeah.
Because I can't remember what order we're doing these in anymore.
No, I can't either. So good.
But it's okay. The interview with Patty Negri, we talk about the fact that there's the three things, mind, body, spirit. So it becomes a thought, becomes an action, which then becomes a spiritual uplift. And then the important part of all spell work is once you do the spell, stop thinking about it.
That's it.
It's done. So mote it be. You don't need to then bring it back or like keep thinking about it or stressing about it. Because the more you're attaching yourself to it, the more you're pulling that thought form back into the reality and you're stopping it from manifesting.
Changing it. Yeah, you're changing it because like that spirit part is like the battery. So you've done it, you've raised the energy, you've done your thing, it's done. That's it. Gonna leave it at that.
Let it go.
We're back to a musical.
This is fun though.
It is. I like it.
Randomly
like
breaking it. Out to do song.
We could do little song breaks now, and we can just sing our own.
Well, I mean, I have got my musical instruments here.
Oh yeah, I was going to say you could do that. That would be good.
Let's not do that one. So that's the principle of mentalism.
Yes.
So now. Mm-hmm. What's the next one?
So then now we go to the principle of correspondence.
My favorite one.
Yes, which links a lot. This little quote you will have no doubt heard. So this one for it is, as above, so below, as within, so without, as the universe, so the soul. So that basically says it all. Yes. So if you're listening, he's holding up the magician card.
Yes, the magician card from tarot, because this one is 100% as above, so below. So with this particular one, what I love about this is like if you look at anything scientific, you will see that everything repeats itself essentially.
Yeah.
So for example, if you look under a microscope, like actually you have to be more than a microscope, like basically if you look at an atom.
Yeah, I was going to say, whatever the hugest microscope, I can't even think what they're called.
Yeah, if you look at an atom and the way that it has the nucleus and surrounding the nucleus, you have positive and negative ions or neutrons or electrons or whatever that are moving around it, electrons and whatnot. So they're all, it basically looks the same as the solar system, which is the sun in the middle and all the planets rotating around it, evenly spaced out, blah, 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 blah. And then that is a microcosm of the next microcosm, which is our sun or our solar system rotating around an even larger sun. And that's, it goes higher. Like, I don't know if you've ever seen those glyphs where it goes the size of your thing in comparison to the sun and then the size of our sun in comparison to the next sun and the size of that sun in comparison to the next sun. By the time you get to the biggest sun, you're like, if that one blew up, we'd all get sucked into
the vacuum. I was going to say, we're all in trouble.
Yeah.
It's just no other way of putting it. We're all in trouble.
So based on the law of correspondence, literally everything replicates on a grander level. It's the same thing as like, and you see this in everything. Music is a classic example of this. When you have the seven notes, do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do. Well, actually, technically, do is repeating. It's already wrapped in the eighth note, which is going back to the first one. But then you have another octave after that. Like, I'm not going to do the next octave up because it's like going into my head voice and we're not here to sing that much. So you see like that literally the octaves repeat themselves again and again and again and again until the perceptions of sound can no longer be perceived by our ears, but they keep going.
They keep going because dogs, it's the whole thing, like with dogs. Yep. You know, like where dogs can hear the sounds that we can't hear and things like that. Like it's still going. It's just we can't hear it anymore.
Yeah, exactly. So, but not even to that degree of like things replicating in that sense. There's also with correspondence, that's why we have where we attribute certain herbs and certain planets and certain colors and certain objects with other things, like we correspond them together, we link them. So as an example, you have like fire. If you think of the element of fire, you often think of the color red, and then you might think of the planet Mars, and then you might think of the god Aries, and then you might think of attributes or traits of either aggression or power or something along those lines. And then magical tools, obviously, depending on whether you practice one or another.
Which way you do it.
It'll either be sword or it will be wand, depending on what you believe in. That one gets a bit controversial. And then like with that, I mean, I can't think of the fire. I think the easiest ones that representative of fire in herbs would be like pepper.
Yeah, you get all like the cinnamon, hot things. And
anything that has that hot.
Yeah. See, because again, that's a correspondent. It's almost like a category or a grouping of things that have similar traits or similarities. And it just really highlights that everything is connected.
Yes.
Everything is completely connected. Yeah.
Which is why it's important as witches to understand your correspondences. Like that's why, I mean, in each of the Sabbat episodes at the end, we always put a list of correspondences very quickly.
Yeah.
But it's important to understand those because there's some universal principles that these are based on.
Yeah. This is where all of that actually comes from, is on from this basis of this principle of correspondence. It's where it all is. It's how we begin to understand the unknowable, I guess. When we're trying to make sense of the world around us, we put things into different correspondences. And it's that reflection of our outer world is a reflection of our inner world. If we're going on more of a emotional, mental sort of side of things, it's that everything is connected and everything outside is what comes inside as well.
I actually had an example here, which was to do with herbology, which is not my forte, but I know that it's up Vicky's alley.
Yes.
So as an example, herbalists will often look for correspondences of shape, color, texture, and the growing season to both the human body and the elements. So energies of the plant world formerly unknown can be applied to the human world for healing. So lungwort has lung-shaped leaves and is used for respiratory ailments.
Yep.
The roots of Solomon's seal look like tendons and are used for either to tighten or loosen tendons and ligaments. Hawthorn berries are red, which is the color associated with the heart and blood, and hawthorn is used for the heart. Yellow color or jaundice is a sign of liver dysfunction, and dandelions have yellow flowers, which is used to heal the liver. So like even just on the tiniest level, by looking at either the shape or the season that it grows in or that any property of that herb, it's very easy to then attribute it to something in the body. And it's actually the basis of modern medicine.
Yes. Yeah. It's doctrine of signatures is where that sort of comes from, is creating those links between the different, between plants, different attributes of different plants and things like that to what they fix or heal or help with or all of that stuff.
Yes. Do you know who that was actually, it's being credited to?
No.
Paracelsus. Credited to him. Because I literally, as soon as you said doctrine of signatures, it literally says doctrine of signatures right here.
Yes.
So I thought I'd get a little bit of herbology.
I like it. I love it.
That's slowly so learning, cool. Very slowly.
I love it. That's cool. But then also on another kind of aspect on how everything is sort of connected a little bit as well, if we go through the planes of existence, you can think of it as in like if you, for example, if somebody is feeling weak physically, there's going to be that effect. There's probably going to be a weakness mentally and a weakness spiritually as well. Like they all have that flow on kind of effect a little bit as well. And by correcting one, it may correct the others because they correspond, because they're linked together.
So this is actually, I mentioned this recently to Michael Herkes. Shout out to Michael if you're listening, because I know he sometimes listens to our show. We miss you already.
Yes.
If you don't know who that is, go back and watch
episode of Michael Herkes. Yes,
awesome. When we talked about glamour magic. I was talking to him recently about the book that I have got, which is The Body is the Barometer of the Soul.
Yes.
I think it's by Annette Noonan. I could be wrong. If anyone wants more information, I'll stick the information in the link. Note to self, sticky.
Yes, I was going to say, let's write that down because we do forget that we say that sometimes.
Okay, cool. I've written it down. It's based on the same principles because it talks about the fact that when you have a physical ailment in your body, it's connected to or corresponds to a spiritual ailment in your psyche or whatever.
Yeah.
And no joke, every time I have had something wrong with me physically, and I'm not saying this as a doctor, please.
No.
This does not omit you from going to the doctor and getting a medical checkup or whatever you need.
Because because all three are linked. You've got to treat all three in their respective kind of fields.
Exactly. So by treating the physical, you might, for example, go get medicine. or get a massage or do something physically to the body to change it.
Have some herbs.
Do whatever. Something in the mental plane, you, by reading about it, you then become knowledgeable of it. So you then go, oh, okay, that's how it's connected. And it makes you more aware. Yeah. And then spiritually, you can then work on it. Like depending on what it is, whether it's through meditation, reflection, journeying work, whatever it might be, doing a spell. So you can do things in all three planes. And I've actually found this is why... I don't know if anyone's going to think, why would you do that? So I had done it back in my earlier Christian days.
Yes.
I did a pilgrimage to the top of a famous monastery in Montenegro called Ostrog.
Yeah.
And in this particular monastery, they have got no recorded, what's the word I guess I'm looking for? Like many cars going up this mountain have come off the mountain and fallen and smashed and whatever. There has not been a single recorded injury. No one has ever died or injured themselves on this mountain going
falling
up to this
off
pilgrimage.
The mountain.
No one ever. And they say that this mountain has got healing properties. And I have gone so far as to, I bought a bottle of holy water that comes from the spring that comes from the mountain that they bottle up. Yep. And I brought that back to Australia. And then I used to sip that holy water anytime I had the slightest inkling of something coming up.
Yeah.
Wouldn't happen.
Wow.
For years, I did not get sick. And whether it's a placebo, because if my mind says it is, therefore it's so.
But then what is a placebo, though? Do you know what I mean? Like, what is placebo? Isn't nothing.
It's
your body healing. Yeah, that's right. You're healing yourself. It's mentalism.
It's mentalism, exactly. Yeah. So this whole thing of, because of the fact that, you know, this water is said to have come from that spring and da-da-da, and I'd sip that and da-da-da, I just wouldn't get sick.
That's awesome.
So.
I love that.
Magic.
Yeah. See, that's it. And I love it. And that's all the correspondence side of things. It's that what you put through all the planes of existence. It's like even when we talk about it, the different Sabbaths and things like that as well, like especially the spring equinox, where we talk about like physically cleaning your house.
Yep.
Has a effect on physically clearing your mental space and your mental space, which then has an effect on
your spiritual space and your practice.
So all of those things that correspond because they're similar. They're in that correspondence group.
Yes, which is why we say that any form of spiritual cleansing needs to start with physical cleaning.
Yes.
Sorry, you can't get out of this. You need to do some housework.
Yeah. Poo.
I mean, you could hire a cleaner, but anyway.
I was just saying, I want to get the was it Genie? I dream of Genie, where she used to just kind of blink
your eyes.
And then everything would just do its thing and be clean. See, I want to do that.
I want to do Mickey Mouse in Fantasia.
That's it. Yes, where they're all around and they're dancing and they're cleaning.
And all the brooms start sweeping.
Everybody's doing their thing. I want to do that. That is going to be my goal. That's my goal now.
Okay, so moving on then.
Let's move on.
Next one we have is the principle of vibration. So Vicky, tell us a little bit about this one.
Interesting one. I like this one, vibration. Mm-hmm. So vibration, nothing rests, everything moves, everything vibrates. So under this sort of principle or law, whatever you say, is exactly that. Nothing moves. Everything is moving. Nothing, even stop. If we go into now, actually science has also proven this as well, that they're with it, that nothing is actually solid.
No.
Everything is at different frequencies and different vibrations, and they're all vibrating. Just it's a scale of things. It's just, it looks to us that it's solid, but they're actually not. There's space between everything.
The simplest form is, like, for example, if you take water.
Yeah.
Water, when you put it in a freezer, all the freezer does is it causes the water molecules to vibrate at a different frequency, which is why they become ice, because under the temperature causes the vibration to slow down.
Slower down.
And then when it slows down enough, it becomes dense.
Yeah.
Whereas when you apply heat to water, it causes the molecules to speed up and they dissipate.
They get all
and
excited, don't they?
And they become steam.
Yeah. They're like, we're out of here.
So based on the law of or principle of vibration, like even on that simplistic level of water, like you can see how when you change the environment and therefore change the vibration, you then change the density of the thing.
And that's usually it, and that's what density it is. It's the different manifestations of matter, energy, mind, I guess even spirit, just results from the varying rates of vibration or frequency. Did you like that?
I did. But my brain just went to when I used to give my sister shit. I used to like throw hermeticism insults, like hermetic insults at her. And like instead of calling her dense, I would say that she's just operating in a different vibration to me. But I never say what vibration.
Why? Yeah, that's it. I love it.
I would laugh. No one else around me would
be like, what? I said, what?
Yeah, anyway, sorry. So, hi, sis, if you're listening.
And like we mentioned, it's that scale of, so the vibration moves along that scale of from, I guess, the densest to the least dense or and beyond.
Yeah. And it's the same thing. Like, for example, have you ever met someone or walked into a place and you've said that they have a bad vibe?
Yeah.
So the principle of vibration is explains that essentially. So it's that person's vibration, that energy that they're giving off, it kind of feels like sucky or gross or whatever you want to call it. Like insert any favorite emotive word here. And like, because you're obviously operating in a different vibration, but by going through their energetic space, it alters your own state and it makes you feel icky.
Yes.
So this is why, I mean, in spiritualist movements and new age people, they're always talking about raising your vibration and raising your vibration. Everything's about raising your vibration. And it's not just a whole heap of hoopla woo-woo. Like that's why we burn, for example, when creating sacred space, we tend to use things like myrrh and frankincense because the smells raise the vibrational frequency of the space around us, which creates that sacredness.
Yeah, it's creating that more, I guess, high vibrational space so that you're coming up to that more spiritual plane rather than the physical, which is probably the most dense out of everything.
And a way that you can kind of see this one working out is, for example, affirmations would come from the basis of vibrational statements.
Yeah.
So that's what it also connects to a few of the other ones, but that's okay. But for the purposes of vibration, they actually did this experiment. I cannot remember what his name was. It was a Japanese gentleman where he subjected water molecules water molecules to particular words.
Oh, yes.
And so when they
done this with plants as well.
Like when they subjected it to the sound, the vibration of like negative words.
Yeah.
Harmful words. Maybe that's a better way to put harmful words. Then essentially then the water molecules looked all like jagged and like all over the place and whatever. But when they subjected them to more loving words like love and peace and harmony and all of that kind of stuff, then the water molecules looked pretty like little snowflakes. And they're all beautiful.
They made like beautiful, almost like their mandala kind of patterns and things like that.
Yep. So that's like even just a tiny example
of
how you can use these principles in science, and science can actually prove magic.
That's right. Because they've also done it with plants as well, with growing plants that I think it was actually in a school kids did it, and they had to be really rude and abusive to this one plant. And then they had to be really loving to this other plant. But apart from that, they all received the same light, same everything else. So there was no other thing. And the one that got the insults was all wilty and not very happy. And the other one was growing beautifully.
Do you know what I just realized? You've just given me an epiphany.
Oh, have I?
I have my two.
I have that effect on people.
My peace lilies. One of them is next to Chris's office where he's constantly talking about work. Oh. And the other one is at the back of the house where we're always like cheerful and fun and whatever. And they grow differently.
Yeah. Different. Yeah. Because it's that different density, that different space.
Because I was thinking like I water them and at the same time. I keep them the same. Like, you know, there's nothing different except their physical location. I'm like, they're being subjected to different vibrations.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just had a light bulb moment.
I love that. So good. And because like, even if you look at a plant, like when it's sad or whatever, it's drooping. And when we talk about when we're feeling sad or things like that, it's a heaviness. It's often described as like a heaviness. So it's that denser, lower vibration. Whereas you feel lighter and more expansive with the higher kind of vibrations. Yeah. So the plants go up towards the sky.
I actually sometimes sing to my plants.
Yeah, I do too. I talk to them. I talk to them, sing. I play music for my plants too.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah, when I'm out in the garden, I play nice music.
Like, I was going to say, don't tell me you play like heavy metal.
No, I don't. I play, like, if I'm actually doing gardening, I'll play like some nice sort of meditation-y music that's kind of foresty.
Oh, actually, that's it. That reminds me of the thing you were going to talk about with the speaker and the sand or the...
Yes. It's so, if you want to see, I guess, see the law of vibration in a physical kind of form, there's two different ways that are really amazing. There's lots of videos that go up on like YouTube and things like that, where sand is put on, I think it's a metal tray, and it's above a speaker, and then they'll play music, and the vibrations from the sound will actually create these amazing like geometric shapes and mandalas and things like that. And it's all purely just from the vibration and from the sound. And you can also do a similar thing with a singing bowl. If you've got a large singing bowl and have water in it and you play the singing bowl, you'll see the water will actually start to move and vibrate and do all these amazing shapes. So they look absolutely amazing. I love them. It's just the most gorgeous patterns, and all it, and different music and different frequencies create different patterns.
Well, that's also the basis of like a lot of like when I'm emotional, I will sometimes intentionally listen to particular music to change my emotional state, to either A, come out of a bad emotion or a harmful emotion, I guess is probably a better way to put it, because I don't like
dense saying, emotion.
I don't think
any heavy emotion.
Exactly. So I'll either do it to bring myself out of it, or I'll do the opposite and I'll take myself deeper into it just to really
get it out. Yeah, feel it and really get it out. Because I'm often, I'll do that, get things to make me cry. to get it out, like to help move it through.
Yeah, exactly.
That's such a, and that brings into another point that like to change our sort of mental state. We change our vibration if we change our vibration through the use of our will. So this is where we can come into with a little bit of our magical stuff is our use of will, that we can change that state just by focusing on it. Where focus goes, what is it? Where focus goes, energy flows.
Yeah.
It's that kind of same kind of principle as well. So it can have a greater effect.
And that even takes us back to the principle of mentalism again.
Yep. And even the law of correspondence, where we can have that greater effect. If we change our mental state, that can have a greater effect on our outside world as well. So this is where they all start to intertwine. And
yeah. And it's only going to get more confusing as we go. So if hopefully you're keeping up with us.
Yes. This is also something, I guess, from a magical point of view, things of what you could do is also like chanting and because that's often a way that I will use to raise energy. And things like that as well is chanting or sound and things like that.
Yeah, I do a lot of in my meditation practice, whenever I'm feeling particular ways, I'll grab my mala beads and I'll literally just sit there doing mantras.
Yeah.
And I'll just go over it and 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 over it. 108 progressions.
Yep. Yes.
Yes, to then change my mental state. And like I literally, there's no way to not feel blissful and calm after doing 108 mantras of something.
Yep.
Whatever it might be. Obviously, you're not going to...
I was going to say, as long as it's not a really heavy word or something that's going to really bring you down a little bit. But yeah, if you're doing those different mantras or chants or all of those kind of things, it's all working from that law of vibration.
Yes. So then moving on to the principle of polarity.
What's
your little quote for this one, Vicky?
I'll give you the little quote for polarity. I quite like this one. It's a bit longer. Everything is dual. Everything has poles. Everything has its pair of opposites. Like and unlike are the same. Opposites are identical in nature, but different in degree. Extremes meet. All truths are but half truths. All paradoxes may be reconciled. I like that one. I think that one's actually one of my favorite ones.
And so with this particular one, this is one of the one that I find in the magical community, we really need to be careful with our understanding of this one.
Yes.
Because we talk about things in polarity, but oftentimes we tend to lump things together, thinking that things that are on different opposites are somehow linked to other opposites, but you can't. Yes. They're all mutually exclusive pairs of opposites.
Yes, because it's opposites of the same thing. So, for instance, take temperature for an example. You've got
hot and cold. Heat,
you've got hot and cold, but they're of the same thing.
Yeah.
You can't jump in and put happiness and sadness in that same
You can't say that hot equals happy and cold equals sad because
some people they're not the same.
Like, I mean,
it's not the same coin.
If you say hot is happy, and then you go to, for example, Abu Dhabi.
If you say me, I don't like the heat.
Yeah.
It makes me, I wilt.
Yeah.
But I like the cold. But then somebody else you talk to, it can be the complete opposite.
Exactly.
Because they're not this, they're not coming from the same thing. So opposites are extremes of the same thing, or like two sides of the same coin.
Yeah. And we have to make sure that any description of the two opposites is considered, it's never an absolute.
Yes.
So they're not absolutes. There's spectrums here.
Yeah.
For example, like it's a relative description that we have to compare it to something else. So if I was to say to you, what is hard? Well, in comparison to what?
Yeah.
Because that in itself, like you have to, for example, you can't describe hardness unless you're comparing it to something soft. For example, if we do hard and soft, I gave this example to you off camera.
Yeah.
So if we have hard and soft and we say we have a feather and we have chalk, one would be hard and soft?
So chalk would be harder than feather.
Yeah. But then if I take chalk and have granite, is hard and soft?
So then you've got granite that would be harder and the chalk would be soft.
So now all of a sudden chalk has flipped from being hard to being soft based on relativity.
Yeah. Oh, I love it.
Because of how it relates to the other one.
Yeah.
So,
but again, they're still on that same scale. That's the key point, is that they're on that same scale. You're measuring it by the same thing.
Exactly. And then there was another one that I wanted to think of. Hang on. I've just lost my train of thought.
Do you want me to jump in and then?
Yeah, you jump in.
Because this one can also link into it as well with what we were just talking about with the law of vibration as well, because you've got where they come from, like a low vibration. Otherwise, some things vibrate higher or some things vibrate at a different density. So we can also use that on the mental plane with our emotions and things like that as well, where if we're trying to move or transform different emotions, if we keep to the same plane and come to the opposite of that emotion, it's much easier to try to shift than if we go onto a different track. So for instance, say, happy and sad. So say you're sad. So in order to, if we come up and say, no, you need to be courageous to get rid of that sadness, you can't measure it the same way. It's not going to work. So it's two completely different. They're on two different tracks, what we were trying to talk about before with everything being on that same line.
Yeah. And it's like, for example, what you're saying there, it's that whole thing of keeping them separate. Like,
we
can't be lumping things together. For example, and I literally have some here. So if we go, people often equate things like up, white, good, male, day, positive.
Yes.
On one side.
All together.
And then negative, night, female, evil, black, and down to the opposite, to the like other side.
Dark.
Like,
yeah.
But you can't think like that.
Because they're not, because it's got to be opposites of the same thing. They're not on the same line. So all of those things are probably, so how many, you probably said about six different things in each category. That's six different lines that have their opposites. They're not the same.
No. And you can't call them same. And this is why when we talk about positive
light
and negative,
and dark.
Like when people say like dark or black or negative, or then they lump them all together, like even just that on its own, like, when it comes to science, positive literally refers to positive electrical charge, while negative refers to negative electrical charge. So someone in the scientific realm decided that a certain charge is called positive and a certain charge is called negative, but realistically, the charges is just different.
Yeah, like, you know, it's just different of the same thing. It's extremes of the same thing.
Exactly. So if you think of this in respect to ions, now there are certain types of music that you can listen to and certain activities you can do. Like, for example, if you sit near running water, like they're running water fountain or near a stream or something, that releases negative ions and that's supposed to make you feel good. So negative ions, but they're making you feel good.
Yes.
Now you can go the opposite end. If you take vitamins or supplements or something that, or medicine that's supposed to make you feel good and they're classed as positive ions, but then the moment that you take too many of them,
they're not good.
It can have a negative effect on you and they can actually make you feel shit.
Yeah.
So even a positive ion positive thing can make you feel negative if it's in excess. So it's all about balance.
Yeah.
Which is why we get this concept of the yin and the yang.
Yeah.
Like everything has an element of opposite. Yeah.
Everything has a bit of it in there.
Exactly. Yeah, so I just that's what I was trying to say before. It's the whole positive and negative, because we often think black, dark equals negative.
Yeah.
But that's not true, because
white and black magic.
Oh, no.
White and black magic. Like it's not.
It's not a healthy conversation, or one that we should be having these days.
No.
Like when people still say, oh, do you practice black magic? It actually grinds my gears when people still have this concept of black equals bad.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether this is systemic racism, that we've equated black to meaning bad or whatever
it is. I think a lot of it
has. White is right and black is bad, whatever it might be. But this is where we need to, as magical practitioners, we need to stop using this like vernacular so that then the non-magical folk, muggles, so that we can train them and teach them not to use the same term. But if we're using within our own community, like monkey see, monkey do, they're going to start using them to refer to our practice.
That's
So now there was one other point that I wanted to give you. It was talking about when we're casting a magic circle and wanting to banish all negative energies.
Yes.
So remember what I just said about sometimes negative energies can actually be positive for you?
Yes. As
in they're negative in nature, but they have a positive outcome in you. So if you're banishing all negative energies, that means you're also banishing all negative ions. So we need to also, when doing spell casting, you're shooting yourself in the foot by using the word negative in any spell casting practice. You're better off banishing all harmful energies as opposed to negative energies.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Although I'd use this as a bit of a teachable moment to some, in case there's some people out there who don't know any better, because it's oftentimes when you see these watered down versions of our practice written by people that have been doing witchcraft for like 5 minutes, and they use these very blanket terms of, oh, it's love and light and positive and da-da-da-da-da. It's all about positivity, welcoming the positivity and banishing all negative forces. No. You're saying it wrong.
Yeah, that's it. You've got to be very particular. That's something we always say, isn't it? That you need to be very particular with your words.
Yeah. So I actually say when I'm casting circle, I say to banish all harmful energies, both positive and negative. So I'm talking about, so I'm banishing the harmful energies, both positive and negative.
Yep. Just wherever, whatever's going to be harmful.
Because
if you've got
a sickness or an illness, like I think when we spoke to Storm Fairy Wolf, use this example. If you had cancer and you fed it more positive energy, you would be growing the cancer. So in that instance, you'd be wanting to. So in that sense, positive energy is considered harmful. So you'd want to banish that. But you could welcome negative energy because it's sucking that, like it basically depleting it.
That's it, suffocating it, kind of.
Yeah,
thing.
Exactly. Cutting
off its supply.
Sorry, I know I jumped on a bit of a soapbox just
now. I like that. That's good. But it's a way of understanding them in real terms, as well as also understanding how important it is for us to actually kind of to really do understand these underlying principles. And that's what I was trying to say before, that it's not necessarily about that we have to know everything about all of it. It's just that if we can work with those energies, we're going to then start to have better effects, I guess.
And this is where I'm actually trying to check myself every time I say things in the mundane world where I talk about things being really negative. I'm like, oh, why am I connotating bad with negative? Like, oh, there's a connotation there that I shouldn't be doing. So I'm now trying to reframe how I say things in the mundane world, because it then becomes easier not to slip up in the magical world.
Yes, it is. And especially emotions. Mm-hmm. That's always a really good one as well, is what we often perceive, I guess, like anger and sadness.
Sadness, fear, hurt, guilt. We call them negative emotions, but they're not.
Or bad emotions or whatever, but they're not. It's just an emotion.
It's just emotion.
And again, it's the extremes of that same emotion that denote whether it's harmful or, because I mean, the reason for anger and things like that is to help us to rise up and to stand up and get power. But if it's not used in the right way and it's used to the opposite extreme, then that's when you can get like the more harmful effects of anger. So again, it's that scale on that as well.
Well, for example, if you use that going down that tangent, like if you think of when you have something like like we've said this a bit in the past when we talked about some other stuff, about people say love and hate are on opposite sides of the coin, but they're actually not.
Yeah.
Yep. Love and hate are the same side of the coin, opposite extremes.
Yeah, that's right.
So it's actually love and fear that are opposites, but love and hate, it's basically one is just given in a positive manner and the other one is given in a, like, it's not even negative.
It's manner. Almost, it's almost polarity within polarity.
Exactly. Exactly.
Polarity of one side of the polarity.
Because if you apply anger to love, you get passion.
Like
that fire, you know, if you get not anger as in angry with your partner, I'm saying
no, you get the
the anger within your love life, you get that kind of animalistic passion, that lust, that
the
drive,
part that's giving you that power, the part that's giving you that power to stand up and things. Yeah,
whereas if you have anger applied in the opposite end of the spectrum within love, that's when you get hate and loathing and all that kind of stuff. Like, it's a toxic,
that toxicity
manifestation of anger within love. Are you following me?
I was going to say, I think we've just gone into polarities of polarities within something else.
Within polarities.
This is only just one little aspect.
Well, because the same thing is, if I go on that same tangent with love and fear being its opposite. So if we talk about fear, when you have, like, fear can be a positive because it can trigger you to stop, like, to not do something that could potentially kill you. Harm you.
That's it. All of the emotions.
It can also be a negative when it stops you from doing something you could be really good at.
Again, it's that extreme of both, because that's why all emotions in there itself, we can't say they're positive or negative because they're actually all just neutral. They all serve a purpose. There is a reason for it. We have that fear so we don't go shove our finger or go shove our hand in a fire or shove something in an electric socket or walk in front of a car or whatever. Like, it's supposed to be there. It's a safety mechanism. It's just when we take it to that extreme that it becomes harmful.
Exactly.
So it's that scale again.
This is fun. Why haven't we done this episode before?
I don't know.
So from there, we move on to the principle of rhythm.
Okay. Here's my little thing for this one. Everything flows out and in. Everything has its tides. All things rise and fall. The pendulum swing manifests in everything. The measure of the swing to the right is the measure of the swing to the left. Rhythm compensates. So there you go. That's a little one for rhythm. So rhythm is, I guess, measured motion. It is that pendulum swing within everything, that forward, back, the ebb and flow, the movement also. So this one links a lot to what we were just talking about with polarity as well, is that it's that movement between the polarities. That's the rhythm. That's where we can get to that. And that energy is always constantly flowing and moving, and that everything is going one way or another, and that we, as in a magical perspective as well, as if we can learn to kind of work with those ebbs and flows and things like that, then we can actually start to direct that energy and start to move.
But this is really sick of the basis of all magic. I mean, we talk about the lunar calendar, we talk about the solar calendar. This is all rhythm. Like,
how the moon waxes and wanes.
Yeah. And how that controls the tides that come in and out.
Yeah.
Which then also how that affects your emotions that rise and fall.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, having worked in customer service for most of my life, without looking at a calendar, I could tell you when it was a full moon.
Yep.
Because all these fucking crazy people would call and complain about the dumbest shit. And there's a reason why the word lunacy, in other words, crazy,
that's where it comes
has
from.
The word lunar in it, because the moon controls their craziness.
Yeah.
It's the same reason why domestic violence cases go up and police get called out a lot more around full moons, because people lose their mind.
Yeah.
So there's like all of these cyclical things that happen. It's the same reason why, like, we do some things on the full moon, some things on the dark moon, some things on the waxing moon, some things on the waning moon, the same time, same reason why we do some things in certain parts of the solar calendar.
Yeah.
And then even if you go on an even grander scale, because even the sun is moving around the galaxy, around the space, it's not static, it moves as well, because everything's in rhythm. Moving. So I mean, I don't know what the solar cycles are in that
I was gonna say the bigger grander scale, I don't
how
know
many
how
light
many
years,
years
it would take,
and
but,
stuff yeah
but even like, for example, the Hindus knew this, and they would call that the great epoch yugas, And each yuga, which is when the sun goes around whatever it's going around.
Yes.
That has a different, like each point around that journey has a different thing. But I don't know what time scale we're talking here, because
I think, isn't it like 20,000 years or something like that? I think for each epoch, or I'm not sure.
Which is
it's
when
you
think,
lots of thousands, it's thousands of years anyway.
So we're a blip of a blip of a blip of a blip of a blip on this planet.
Yep, definitely.
And nothing.
Okay, way to build you up. We're nothing.
We're nothing. Well, no, if you think about it, in the grand scheme of things.
We are, and that's the thing. But then there's also freedom in that as well, because in one aspect where we're nothing, we're also everything.
Yeah.
We're also part of the all.
Now I feel like we're starting to sound like Yoda now.
I know. We're bringing it all out.
You're nothing, but you are everything.
But you are everything. Everything you are.
A little exercise you can do with this one, which I've done before, is actually heartbeat control.
Oh.
So getting into a meditative state and then controlling your heartbeat to slow down or speed up. It's possible.
Yeah, it is.
Using your mind and your relaxation response, and you have to really focus, but it's actually possible. Like, I'm with my Muse, that headband that I've got, that Fandango thing. Yeah. So that's actually on my app. It's got a thing that it can measure it. And so I try to, each time I do it, I try to make my heartbeat go slower and slower and slower. And then you allow it to return back to a normal pace. Because this is the thing, you have to be very
careful.
Don't want to
stay. I was going to say, you don't want to stay down there.
No, and you also have to be very careful.
Don't want to stay up here either.
You can't kill yourself using your mind doing it this way. But like, it's, they say that there's, through a monastic practice of meditation, you can actually, there have been some cases of people who have slowed their heart rate right down to the point that you could almost be perceived dead.
Yep.
And then you could allow it to speed back up again.
Yep.
I have not mastered that yet.
No, I was gonna say, I haven't quite gone to that extreme.
No.
But the breath is a good one, like a good example with that as well, that you can, by different breath practices, you can can influence all those other things as well.
Yes, exactly.
And it's also this one also with rhythm on a, I guess, on an emotional state and on a more personal kind of aspect, I guess, for want of a better word. It's important to that there's to know that there is emotional tides and that life has ups and downs, like all of these kind of things. There's this kind of culture that we kind of keep going that we have to strive for happiness all the time. And when we don't get it, we think that we've done something wrong, that it's something else that we have to change or do or fix or whatever. But for every happiness, there is going to be sadness.
Well, without sadness, you wouldn't know what happiness is.
Exactly. That's right. And each time, there's always going to be these ebbs and flows and tides and movements and changes through our whole life. And like you said, each one we go through builds on the next one so that we can understand something better. If you were happy your whole life and given everything your whole life, how can you really appreciate it the same way as somebody who didn't have anything? Who didn't have it and then had something, you would actually appreciate it. That's something that I often say on a like a personal level as well, is like you hear a lot of people say that like with partners, like with their lovers or partners, I probably would not have I wouldn't have stayed with Scott. I wouldn't have appreciated him for who he is if I hadn't perhaps experienced bad, what I perceive as bad or harmful relationships before.
Absolutely.
If he'd come at the beginning, I might not have actually stayed with him because I didn't have the understanding around it that can only come from that down, what we perceive as the more downside of things. So we have to have, and life is just full of ebbs and flows. And if we continue to think, that's why I get a little bit antsy with this whole, I'm not saying that positivity isn't a good thing. It definitely is. But that it's all the only thing, it can be really harmful to people.
You're robbing half of the cycle.
Yeah, that's right. And that's where true suffering comes from, is our attachment to that happiness or to that external thing but if we just allow
Buddha.
I know, look at me going, where the fuck's all this coming from? I'm getting into the laws now.
Okay, Buddha. Our attachment to happiness is actually detrimental to our...
Sorry, that was a little bit of yoga coming out there of the yoga philosophy.
That was very yogic.
It was, wasn't it?
Yeah, but that's a good thing.
It is, but again, it's those flows. the ebbs mm-hmm. and flows. It's the rhythm. That's all this, how intrinsically they are. They can be either a physical thing, they can be within our lives, they can be a spiritual thing. Mm-hmm. These laws and principles are so deeply ingrained. And like I said, rabbit holes.
Oh, like this is the thing, like we've already been recording for a while.
I'm just thinking we're recording okay. for a while. We're near the end.
We're okay though. We're near the end. We've only got, I think, maybe.
And we can always put little time stamps on the thing, individual things.
We've only got like two left anyway.
Yeah, we're fine.
We're fine.
Good. We're doing good.
I mean, there are other laws of magic, but we won't get there today. The next one that we have is the principle of gender.
Yes.
Now, this is going to be a controversial one because people have a misconstrued idea of what gender is. With yes. the context of magic, we are not entering into a discussion about gender identity.
No.
Gender in magic.
This is not what this is about.
It's got nothing to do with gender identity. Gender identity is a social psychological thing.
Yes.
Is that the right word? Psychosocial. So. Yeah, psychosocial. So, yes. Psychosocial phenomenon.
Yeah.
We're talking purely about gender in reference to magic.
Yeah, and universal laws.
Yes, because the two things are mutually exclusive.
Yes,
because I've heard a lot of people, especially like, because I am part of the LGBTIQ plus two, whatever, ABCDEFG, alphabet mafia. And whenever people are like, oh, but I'm non-binary, so how can I honor gender in magic? I'm like, I need to like, woo-sah. It's not the same thing, people. It's not the same thing. So when we talk about gender, we need to be very clear on in what context we're referring to it.
Yeah, and it's also, it's whatever meaning we've attached to that word as well. And that's where the framing of it all kind of comes from a little bit, is that attachment we have to what that word means. And when you talk about it in most terms, we're talking on the physical level only.
Yes.
That's really what people are really talking on. Yes. So, yes. So listen to this one and then you'll have a little bit of a different perspective on gender. So the little bit with gender is in everything. Everything has its masculine and feminine principle, gender. Mm-hmm. Manifests on all planes. So all planes. Okay. So gender is manifested as masculine and feminine principles, principles that are present in everything.
Yes.
So often what we perceive as masculine and feminine is purely the physical manifestation of it as a biological sex, male or female, with our reproductive parts. Mm-hmm. And it's far beyond that, because regardless of what you have of that physical aspect, we all in a psychological way, in those mental planes, in the spiritual planes, we all have masculine and feminine principles within us. Mm-hmm. Even through science, the left brain, right brain, that is very much a demonstration of feminine, masculine principles that we often have. So, and that's one thing I really wanted to kind of reiterate, like what you were saying as well, is that we often, I think, as a magical practice, we misinterpret that a little bit and we only think of it on that physical level. So when we, I guess, talking about, say, for instance, divine masculine or divine feminine, we're actually not talking about the physical. They transcend the physical into the mental and spiritual planes. So they're beyond that physical manifestation.
Yes.
Does that kind of make sense?
It did to me. Hopefully it did to our listeners.
Yeah.
And it's also the other thing to bear in mind is that over years, depending on what time period the person lives in, I mean, all of you live in the same time period as us right now.
Right now.
We don't know how long this podcast is going to be out there in the ether. There could be someone from the year 3000 and something listening to this podcast. Who knows?
That's right.
So depending on when you are alive, that also the correspondences associated with each gender could actually be different.
Yeah, that's true.
Because it, like, society changes over time, because this is the thing, gender is fluid.
Yeah.
It is fluid. It's again, it's not a one or the other. It's not black and white.
It's the yin-yang.
It's that
principle.
Whole thing of, like, you know, different people have different fluxes. So even the, like we said before, with the opposites, even the most masculine person will still have feminine qualities. And even the most feminine person will still have masculine qualities. Like, to be completely all masculine, would be, I guess, the epitome of what we would consider to be the most toxic of masculinities.
Yeah. Yep.
And no one is that.
No. So
there might be some people who project that.
Yeah.
But in their core, on their tiniest level, I'm sure if they had a child, they would express feminine qualities, quote unquote, feminine qualities of nurturing and caring and all that stuff to their child, even if they're outwardly expressing masculine qualities to society.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yep. Yep. I completely get it. So like the masculine principle is more that direction of giving out, of expanding, of action, all of those kind of qualities, whereas the feminine is more towards receiving, absorbing, mm-hmm. those sort of qualities. And I've got a little quote that kind of highlights the need for both, because again, we're not saying one or the other. Everything has both. Everything is both. Mm-hmm. So it is said that there must be a balance in these two forces. Without the feminine, the masculine is apt to act without restraint, order, or reason, resulting in chaos. The feminine alone, on the other hand, is apt to constantly reflect and fail to actually do anything, resulting in stagnation. With both the masculine and feminine working in conjunction, there is thoughtful action that breeds success, which points out that both the feminine and masculine fulfill each other.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it is. They fulfill each other. It's that balance.
And, you know, it's actually funny that, so even if you look historically at magical practitioners, those who, like we talked about this on the Pride episode, those who were more in flux with the two genders, yep. LGBTIQA plus ABCD, whatever, alphabet mafia, those who sat kind of more between the genders, so two-spirited or gay people, lesbians, bisexuals, all of those, like the fafafine, the mahu, like depending on what culture you're talking about here, they were the ones who attributed with roles in society of being the healers, the shamans, the medicine people, whatnot, because of the fact that they were able to fluctuate between them and work with both energies
more easily, more freely.
Easily, exactly. So this is why, and it's something that I've noticed, especially of recent times, because society has finally caught up with this concept of gender being more fluid. Yeah. I don't know if you've noticed it, Vicky, but I've noticed in the magical community, there are a lot more, technical terms will be transgender, non-binary, androgynous, gender non-conforming people who use they, them pronouns.
Yeah.
There's been an increase, even people who have anatomically female, express female, there's almost like a push, not a push, but there's almost like an influx of people who may present female and express female, but will use they, them pronouns and identify as gender non-conforming.
Yep.
Even though they may express and be female and vice versa. They are physically male, they express as male, but they use they, them pronouns because of the fact that they do not feel that they are masculine in the same way that another man who's masculine. Does this make sense?
Yes.
It's a very touchy subject for a lot of people.
Yeah, it is. And that's why I wanted to tread it lightly, is that we need to move beyond our perception of it, of the physical.
Yes.
That masculine and feminine means male, female biologically. Because when we're talking about it in magical terms, it's just an energy. Again, it's a correspondence, really. It's that you're putting these particular types of energies together. It's a part of the law of correspondence. So it's rather than it being male or female, it is masculine, feminine. It is just purely qualities. It's purely energy.
Like I myself am considered a feminine man.
Yeah.
That said, I have masculine tendencies.
Yeah. That's right. We all have both within us. We all have both within us. And I even, when I was even thinking about this and starting to, I realized how much even myself, even though I kind of understand and move beyond that male, female kind of physical manifestation of it, that it is quite ingrained in us to associate feminine with a female and masculine with a male. Like if you're thinking like a god or a goddess.
I know so many feminine males and masculine females. It's not funny.
Yeah, and that's it. But we do, and we know that. But even just in like if I was to say to you right now, if you were coming from, say, a Wiccan background where you have the god and the goddess, what does that look like?
Mm.
The divine masculine and the divine feminine, what mm-hmm. do they look like? Mm. I know instantly my first thought, if I go divine feminine, it is somebody who looks female
mm-hmm.
and it's somebody who looks male the other way.
Whereas interestingly,
but that's not what it is.
No,
but that's not what it is.
I was going to say, interestingly, in
we've
my
come
practice,
through that we've come through that physical lens
yes.
for too long that we've associated it that way.
Because interestingly, in my practice, I have got a masculine and feminine personification of the god and a masculine and feminine personification of the goddess.
Yeah.
So because sometimes in my practice, I have the god that is very masculine. And for me, it tends to be more of that ram energy,
mm-hmm.
goat energy. Whereas for me, when it's deer energy, it's more of the feminine. So even a stag has horns, it's male.
Yep.
But that's more of the feminine qualities of the divine masculine.
Yes. But has it always, have you always been that way though?
No.
Yeah. See, that's
back in the day.
Yeah.
When I first started my practice, I had goddess and god, two mm-hmm. opposite ends. But now, because I mean, I am a man and I work mainly with god energy because I'm trying to reconcile and rectify my hang-ups about my masculinity, I now have two representations that are both male, but masculine and feminine. So opposite ends of the spectrum, but both male.
Yeah.
But then I equally have got a personification of a feminine and masculine female or goddess.
Yes. Yeah.
Fuck, this is a hard one.
Isn't it? It's really hard. It's really hard to talk about because we have created masculine and feminine as interchangeable with male and female.
Which they are not.
And then they're not. And under this law, that's why we really wanted to try to make that point, is that it's not male, female, then those terms are not interchangeable. It's again, it goes on that what we were talking about before with being on the same line. They're not opposites. They're not opposites of the same thing. This is two different tracks. So
exactly.
Yeah. It's but more about that energy.
But that said, obviously when we're talking about masculine and feminine with respect to witchcraft, we're talking about the confluence of the masculine and feminine energies that are required to create magic. It's the balance that's needed.
Yeah.
Now, not saying masculine, feminine, male, female, remember?
Yeah,
masculine
that's right.
Masculine and feminine are needed to create magic.
So, yeah, that's right. So we need that masculine, that feminine principle that gives that idea, that nurtures, that whatever, but we need that masculine principle that brings forth that action so that we can actually put it into practice or put it out there.
Yeah.
And again, it's not male, female, it's that principles.
That was a hard one.
Wasn't it? I thought that one was going to be really easy, but it was actually really hard.
I thought so too.
And I hope we haven't just confused everybody with everything.
No. And this is why, look, if there is anyone out there who got confused or felt like we're being offensive, we're not.
No.
Unless, of course, we've expressed it poorly. I mean, we tried our best to try to express it in a way. But what we're trying to display here is just that there is a difference between male, female versus masculine, feminine.
Yeah,
and that with witchcraft, gender is needed in magic, but it's separate to gender expression and gender identity.
Yes.
Which is also separate to sexuality. Those
All
those things all are things, different.
So again, we're going back on what we were saying before. It's not on the same line. That's three different lines. They're three different lines with their extremes, their polarities on each of them.
But that said, I think that's why there has been a sudden influx of either A, people who are non-binary or gender non-conforming who are coming to like pagan or witchcraft practices because it's more inclusive.
Yes.
Or equally, those who were already in the practice are now bridging that gap and starting to identify as gender non-conforming and non-binary. I know a few of the authors that we've had on the show use they, them pronouns. I myself have not. So this is, I don't want to confuse anyone. I'm cis male. I was born male, identify as male, but I use both he, him, his, and they, them, theirs pronouns.
Yep.
Reason why is because I'm trying to use my stance in the community to almost combat that head on, to normalize it so that the people who exclusively use they, them pronouns don't feel ostracized by society. So I'm normalizing it by saying, if you want to call me they, them, I will not get offended, because why would I get offended by that? It's not going to hurt me in any way.
No, that's right.
All I'm trying to do is use my platform and my voice to help normalize it for those who use they, them pronouns.
Yes.
So that's so many pronouns in one short sentence.
I know, that's a lot.
Okay.
Okay. I think we've got it out there.
Yeah. Okay. Moving on then to the next one is the principle of cause and effect.
Cause and effect. So this is the last one of the seven principles. Yes. So every cause has its effect. Mm-hmm. Every effect has its cause.
Mm-hmm.
Everything happens according to law. Chance mm-hmm. is but a name for law not recognized. There are many planes of causation, but nothing escapes the law. There you go. There's that one.
So essentially this one, boiling it down, this is talking about the fact that it's telling us that basically nothing happens by sheer chance.
Yeah.
Like, and but that said, many things that seem like coincidences have had a cause from somewhere.
Yeah.
Like, it's like the whole thing of there's that concept of a butterfly flaps its wings in the Amazon and results in a tsunami on the other side of the world.
Yeah.
Cause effect. Obviously there's a massive leap there that's happened, but in the quantum, anything is possible.
That is exactly it.
But it's the same thing as that, for example, the cause may not even be physical in nature. It could be mental or spiritual.
Yeah.
Yep. Which is why this is where the whole cause and effect, this kind of ties all those other ones together, because cause and effect, it's that whole thing of like, I talk about in my coaching practice, when you live at cause, you understand that life doesn't happen to you. Life happens for you. Yes. So I always look for the cause. I live at cause in my life, meaning nothing happened to me. It all happened because of me.
Yeah.
So therefore, by approaching life with a statement of empowerment that I created this reality, I then question, why would I create this negative experience? And then the answer to that is always, well, what can I learn from it? Or what?
Yeah, what can
I? You know what I mean?
Yeah, what can I take away from it?
I believe that I've created everything that exists right now. All of my heartbreak and heartache from my years past, I created them.
Yeah.
And you might think that's a real fucked up way of looking at your life, but it's actually very healing, because you think, well, if I created that, why would I have created that? Well, it's probably to learn something in this lifetime. You know, I'm talking very hyper spiritual lens right now.
Yeah.
Like, you can even talking about the most mundane things as well. Like, often some people often think of this one in response to traditional physics.
Yep.
Because when you said every cause has an effect and every effect has a cause, it's like
every reaction. What
has
is
an
it?
Equal and opposite reaction. Every action has an equal and opposite reaction.
But I
find the concept of cause and effect is probably a lot easier to digest than equal and opposite, because people go, what, equal and opposite? Like then people start to get confused by equal and opposite, because they're almost, it's almost like an oxymoron.
It is. It is a little bit.
Yeah.
Like,
how can it be equal to get too bad
and opposite and doing this and doing that? But yeah, cause and effect. It's that, I guess it comes down to that whole thing of, if you understand the consequences of your actions,
mm-hmm.
then you get to choose what action to take.
Mm-hmm.
It's about taking responsibility. In a lot of things.
Yeah.
It's really about taking responsibility, that everything we do has a consequence. If you mouth off on social media, it has a consequence somewhere else. So it has an effect. Are you the cause, or are you living in the effect?
But equally, because we live in a state of polarity, consequences can also be positive.
They can. That's right. It doesn't necessarily mean it's bad. That's what I meant by, if you know the consequences, you can choose which action you want. It's not necessarily a bad action, or it's going to be a bad consequence. If you know taking that step is going to create this, okay, I'll take that step, not that step. So it's about creating that responsibility, taking self-responsibility and actually being aware of your actions.
Mm.
And also to live, like you were saying before, to live in the cause, be cause, not effect. Because you can actually act or be acted upon. You could actually be moved along through life on the big chessboard that is our life by somebody else's will.
Because
you can just be their effect.
Yep.
As a part of their effect. So be the cause.
Exactly. In other words, take your motherfucking power back. Like,
yeah, that's basically why what it
leave
is.
It the effect of others? That's like,
Yeah.
When people are like, oh, you make me angry. I'm like, no, I don't make you anything. I just did something which you then perceived and made yourself angry over.
Yes.
Because don't give me that power. I don't have that power over you.
Yeah, that's right.
And when someone says to me, you make me so happy. I'm like, no, I don't make you anything. I just am. And based on the interaction you have with me, you choose to be happy.
Yes, that's right. It's a choice.
Like, what?
Yeah, but it's a choice. Again, yeah. It's that understanding, knowing that we are in control of what we want and taking responsibility basically for our life and for our actions and for the consequences of those actions, good or bad.
Even on that same tangent, like if I know that someone always, if I feel a certain way anytime I'm around a certain person, and it's less than favorable,
it's your choice.
I can choose not to hang out with them.
Yeah, but that's the thing, isn't it? You become an effect of that if you're not choosing anymore. Yeah. You can't blame the other person for that. They are who they are, and you then choose. It becomes about choice and power, I guess, and responsibility.
And then this is, I guess, the basis of the Wiccan read, which,
yeah,
like for those that don't know what it is, because not everyone here is a Wiccan. So obviously the simplest version of that is by the Wiccan law, ye must in perfect love and perfect trust, 8 words that we can read fulfill, and ye harm none, do what ye will. What ye send forth comes back to thee, so ever mind the law of 3, follow this with mind and heart, merry ye meet and merry ye part. So this whole concept of the Wiccan read, now some people, we're probably going to do a follow-up episode about it specifically.
Yeah.
But this all comes from the cause and effect, that whatever you put out there is going to come back amplified. That's the whole concept of it. And it's not saying that it's just a Wiccan concept. This is a universal law of cause and effect. Whatever you put out there, and we've had countless guests, Storm spoke about it, Patty spoke about it. So many of them have spoken about it.
I was going to say, most people do.
Ryan has spoken about it. Christopher has spoken about it. Like, whatever you put out there, you're going to get back amplified.
Yep.
Doesn't matter what it is. Based on the law of cause and effect.
Yep. Which also comes into vibration and all of the other ones that we've talked about as well, is because what we're doing is macrocosm, microcosm, all of the other ones. Yeah. Like it's that flow on effect of everything.
So I'm not going to do any practice shaming. If you choose to curse and hex and do all those things and get retribution, all the better for you. You do that, boo-boo. I'm not stopping you. But just remember that whatever you're putting out there is going to come back to you.
Yeah,
because you're attracting.
It's about making informed choices
that into your life, exactly.
Yeah, but it's about making those informed choices, knowing what the consequences are going to be of that action.
Yeah,
good, bad, or otherwise, and then choosing what action you're going to take. And so that's where also, I guess, it becomes really strongly then as well, which we talk about a lot, is using our will and having that strength of our will to be able to move forward and work out what the cause and effect is.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I hope everyone has enjoyed this episode.
I've enjoyed it.
The simplified version of the Emerald Tablet with all the little tidbits that Vicky gave us, the simplified version is: the all is mind. The universe is mental. As above, so below. As below, so above. Nothing rests, everything moves, everything vibrates. Everything is dual, everything has poles, everything has its pairs of opposites. Everything flows out and in, everything has its tides, all things rise and fall. Every cause has its effect, every effect has its cause. Everything happens according to the law. Gender is in everything, everything has its masculine and feminine principles. So that's like the simplified version of all the stuff we spoke about. These are the things that you could even, just that last bit, if you want to learn it, you could even like just write it all down.
Yeah.
Do my trick. Stick it on a piece of paper on the outside of your shower. And every time you're in the shower, you can read it out loud to yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the more that you understand the hermetic principles, the more you'll understand your magical practice, the more you'll understand yourself as a spiritual person on whatever that looks like. Like because this is the fabric, or these are the interwoven threads that create the fabric of life. Oh my God.
Here we go. See, we're pulling out all the philosophical stuff today.
Yeah. So these are the threads that interweave to form the fabric of life. And the more you can understand it, the stronger you can make that fabric.
Yeah.
so that your practice can support you and nourish you and cocoon you and blanket you and all that other stuff. Think of any favorite fabric analogy.
Whatever you're going to do with your fabric. Nice warm jumper.
So I want to hear from you all.
Yes.
Do you want more of this kind of stuff? Yes. Because this is probably as deep and philosophical as we've ever gone. Probably have, yeah. But it's actually a lot of fun.
It is a lot of fun.
I feel like this is like Witch and a Bitch in 2.0. We're done with the fluffy stuff. It's all real now. But no, in all seriousness, like, let us know if these are the type of stuff you want to hear from us. You know, let's peel back the layers of the onion and get to some of the core of some of this stuff rather than just, I mean, we've done a full...
Get to the cause, not the effect.
We've done a full revolution around the sun since we started this podcast. So why not now then... any other time to reinvent this podcast. So let us know how you want us to shape this, how you want us to go forward.
Yeah, so we'd love to hear.
Take it to that deeper level.
Go to the next.
I want to get deep with you.
You just like to do the deep voice.
I want to get deep. I can't even go that deep. It's very hard to talk here. Anyways, until next time, everyone, I hope you've enjoyed this and we will speak to you all soon.
See ya. Bye.